Hello and welcome to We the People, your favorite weekly Nintendo podcast. My name is Michael, and I'm joined by my twin brother, player two since the womb, Matthew. Say hello to the people.
Hello, people.
So, before we get into the show today, just a couple of little Nintendo housekeeping notes. If you didn't know, there's a few tournaments slash events that are going on in-game for a couple of different games. There's a stamp rally happening in Animal Crossing that you could take part in. There is a Splatfest happening for the first time in a long time this weekend. And Pokemon and Smash tournaments coming up. Pokemon tournament is happening this weekend. Smash tournament is happening May 30th. There's a lot to do with these online competitions. Your boy is 4 wins and 2 losses in the Pokemon tournament so far.
It's something.
How about that, Matthew? How about that? That Gigantamax Pikachu that we caught together. I'm putting him to good use. Put him to good use. People don't expect the Volt Tackle, Matthew. People expect a special sweeper, but he comes with the physical attack, and they're like, oh, my light screen didn't do anything.
Well, listen, somebody had to give the face of the franchise his time to shine.
That's what I'm saying, man. I've been like salivating at the opportunity to use Pikachu in a competitive setting ever since I got interested in competitive Pokemon in the fourth generation, and I'm just glad that today's the day. Today's a good day for Pikachu. All right, but after that, let's get into what you came here for, some Nintendo news in the roundup. First news story here, Nintendo files a new patent related to a quality of life project. This has been cooking at Nintendo for, like, forever, and what we see here is not super descriptive. I mean, we'll have some sources that you can see on patreon.com/we the people. We're going to be hosting our community and just like comments. We'll field questions from there. And so you can jump on that website and we can take questions and we'll post all our sources there. But you can check out the images and such in our sources. But basically, this word comes from the website Japanese Nintendo. This seems to fall in line with Nintendo's quality of life initiative that was announced in 2014 by Satoru Iwata. And it should be said that patents like these are filed all the time, constantly by big corporations like Nintendo. So you have to take it all with a grain of salt. You know, for instance, PlayStation has a patent for a portable PlayStation that docks into a TV. And like, you know, we haven't seen a PlayStation Switch yet, but the patent's there. But it tells you that, you know, the minds are working at Nintendo. And basically, this is going to be a device that you sit by your bedside, and it's going to gamify stuff like sleeping. It's going to see how many quality hours of sleep you get, how much you're snoring. And I got to say, Matthew, I'm all into it. What's your thought on it? You're going to go out and buy Super Mario Sleep?
I mean, it seems like there's been, for years now, a lot of people have been trying to develop products that monitor sleep habits and things of that nature. But it's just odd to me coming from a video game company because I just can't imagine what it's like. But if I'm not mistaken, doesn't Pokemon Go have something that monitors your sleep in a sense or does something? I don't know. I'll have to look into that. There's some kind of Pokemon app, I feel like.
So, yeah, what you're referring to is something that was announced alongside some Pokemon Go updates. Pokemon will have these, I guess they're like investor briefings every year that they tape and you're allowed to, you know, go check them out on YouTube and what have you. But they announced something called Pokemon Sleep. And so we haven't seen that yet. And who knows if it'll like integrate straight into Pokemon Go or if it'll be its own thing. I'm also waiting on that. I mean, I have no idea how well my sleeping is going, but I enjoy the gamification of health. You know, it's just nice to have an extra little push to go out on a run or to get enough sleep. You know, and I've always been a sucker, for lack of a better term, for stuff like Wii Fit and Ring Fit. I've been trying to buy Ring Fit, but it's sold out. And I mean, you know, the proof is in the pudding. The stuff sells really well. Wii Fit was one of the Wii's best titles. And then, you know, obviously Wii Sports was a huge hit. Ring Fit Adventure has been flying off the shelves. They can't even stock it fast enough right now. And so I'm excited to see how this works. And I'll jump into it. I'm just, you know, I'm always looking to get a little more healthy, Matthew.
Yeah, well, what I was getting ready to jump into, though, with my thoughts is that I feel like I've been hearing this from Nintendo for years now. I feel like their idea for the Wii U wasn't the Wii U initially supposed to have some sort of life health aspect to it originally, and then they didn't end up doing that. And then I think the Switch was supposed to do that, or it may have been the Switch originally, but I feel like I've been hearing about these ideas for years and nothing's ever come to fruition. So I just don't really understand. Like, I feel like it's this idea that they feel like it could be a cool concept, but it's something that they can't completely put together. Every time they try to get it off the ground, it's like, yeah, this is doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And I mean, I can't picture it because I looked at some concept art for it and I just don't really understand what it's supposed to do. But I feel like that's how a lot of sleep monitoring is in general. Like, there's a lot of smartwatches that do it in other products. And I feel like it's not, it's never as applicable as you feel like it should be. But, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, well, to your point, we have definitely been hearing about this. When they first publicly came out with the whole initiative was, you know, like I said earlier, 2014, and they have not much to show for it. Unless, I mean, you know, unless something like Ring Fit was part of that initiative, maybe they helped with Pokemon Go as part of that. You know, we don't really know what counted or didn't count toward this initiative. But yeah, it doesn't feel like we have that hero product that it sounded like they were trying to create out of this. And we'll see if they make one. I mean, there's been a lot of companies that have broken out with stuff like this. I remember back in the day, everybody had a Fuel Band and then it was the Fitbit. And so there's definitely space for this stuff, but it does seem a little fad-ish. Like, it just kind of comes and goes. So we'll see if, you know, Mario can keep you hooked in, or if they're ever going to make this at all. And that's the other point I was making, is that, you know, with any patent, it might happen. It probably won't. Companies file tons of patents every year as their research and development teams are working on new ideas. And there's just a lot that doesn't come to fruition. So we'll have to see. But on day one, I'll be there. I'll be there. I'm all about this. Next news story, some more, I guess, kind of like products outside of the main Switch lineup. Dixie Kong and Funky Kong have been added to Mario Kart Tour.
Let's go.
That's, I mean, you know, that's, I've got lots of thoughts about this, but you, take us away, Matthew. What is this whole update about?
What is it about? I mean, I mean, it's the Jungle Tour. That's what it's dubbed as. And Mario Kart Tour has been having updates like this where they'll add, sometimes they'll add some courses, they'll add costumes, and they'll add characters. And this time it just happened to be two amazing characters. I mean, we both love the Donkey Kong series, so for us it's extra sweet. But it seems like they've been the most popular additions by far from the social media reaction, but you know, it's really exciting. I mean, I don't like Mario Kart Tour at all. I've played the game a fair bit, or a decent amount. And, the way they have the, what's it called? The Gacha, I think it is, whatever that is, that app games, the, way in which they have you buy things, it's all random. So you can't choose what characters you want to buy, or there's no way to unlock specific characters or carts or anything like that. It's like you get this currency in the game by spending real money, and then it's random what you'll get from that currency. And it's just really awful because you can get the same things over and over again. Like, you can get the same character like 12 times, you know, so it's a shame that such great character additions were added to what a lot of people label as by far the worst Mario Kart game, with some of the worst practices in an app game. I mean, because a lot of app games just have generally crummy practices, but this takes the cake. And it's really surprising that it comes from Nintendo, especially because early on with their app games, like Super Mario Run, were the complete opposite of that. And then I think they just realized, like, you know what? You know, to heck with it. Let's just do what's going to make us the most money. And I think it's been a good revenue stream for them, but it's just disappointing. But it's awesome to see Funky Kong and Dixie Kong in there. And, you know, Diddy Kong's in there as well. He was there from the beginning, but for me as a huge Donkey Kong fan, it just gets me really, really excited. And you know, this comes shortly after seeing the paper mache Donkey Kong helmet at the end of the Paper Mario Origami King trailer. And I just have this sneaking suspicion that something Donkey Kong related is imminent, you know, and it's been, I think, 6 years. Over 6 years since the release of the last mainline series Donkey Kong game, excluding the port of Tropical Freeze. So I feel like something's around the corner, and I feel like they keep throwing subtle hints out there. Obviously, we have the part of Universal Studios that's coming at some point when that park's being built, which is, I think, 2021, 2022, one of those years. But, you know, that's what's got me the most excited, is what this could potentially mean for the future of the Donkey Kong franchise. But it's nice that those characters are in there. I'll probably never get to play them because, you know, it's impossible to really get the characters you want in Mario Kart Tour based on how the system is set up.
Yeah, well, and this is kind of a similar thing to Fire Emblem Heroes, and that's why anytime we play these games or we're talking about them, I feel like it's just important to say that, like, these games have, honestly, they're kind of gambling mechanics. They're, you know, you pay for the chance at getting something, and, you know, some people come down on it on different sides. Some people feel like, well, you know, that's what trading cards are, and I would agree that's what trading cards are, and that's why I don't buy trading cards either. But, you know, it can be kind of damaging and tempting to just keep spending money on these things, and they're designed to kind of hook you into, you know, continuing to spend money on this stuff. And so I don't appreciate the business practice at all. You know, I was much more a fan of the approach that they took with Super Mario Run, where here's a game, we put some effort into it, $10 for this, and, you know, instead of just trying to get you on a bunch of things. But the proof is in the pudding, financially speaking, where, you know, Fire Emblem Heroes, a kind of like a niche game series, just trounced Super Mario Run in terms of the money that it made. And, you know, Super Mario Run had the benefit of being promoted inside of every Apple store for a few months. It got announced at a Big Apple event. I mean, it got the best marketing push and the best chance that it could have. And it's just the market speaks and it says that free to play games are what's going to make you the most money. So that's what they did with Mario Kart Tour. And so I've never honestly gotten into that game. I mean, and with Fire Emblem Heroes, I've spent way more than I should have. I don't know the amount, but, like, you know, you would just be close to getting it. It's like, oh, here's your last chance to get this character, and they're gonna kind of go away for a long time after this, so you better buy another iTunes gift card. And, you know, I'm not gonna have anything to show for that when they shut down the servers of Fire Emblem Heroes and all that stuff goes away, which is the end of all of these games. I mean, I've seen it happen to a bunch of Pokemon apps. There used to be this cool Pokemon app where you could use like Pokemon figurines on a board, and you'd play a board game on the phone. It was awesome, but, you know, they shut it down now, and so all the money that I spent there is now worth nothing, and I don't even have, like, the stuff there to even, like, go and look at anymore. So there's a little bit of dark side to these games, and I wish they would pour a little bit of this creative energy into Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. I mean, you could do two different monetization schemes on there, where, you know, you do this free to play gambling mumbo jumbo on the mobile game, and, you know, that works for some people. On the other side, you know, give me Funky Kong for, like, you know, $2-3. I'll hit that up, or, like, create the Donkey Kong DLC pack. It's got two tracks and two racers and two carts at $5. $10. And, you know, let's do something like that. Mario Kart 8 had the most amazing DLC of probably any game I've ever seen, you know, where they had, I think it was like 12 or $20 to like double the size of the game, and, like, get all those new characters, new tracks. And, you know, that was awesome. And I wish they would do more of that with Deluxe. I mean, north of 15 million sales. I mean, you're going to have some people that'll dip on that.
I would think you would have a lot of people that would dip on it. And, yeah, I mean, that's kind of the thing, is that I think, you know, people have pointed this out a multitude of times, but the reason Mario Kart Tour is so eager to keep adding characters and courses and things like that is because of the nature of the game, is that you're going to try and spend real money to try and unlock these characters. Whereas, like, you know, DLC for a game like Mario Kart 8 is not going to be the same. And if they could get away with that on a console game, they would probably be adding a you know, an insane amount of content to Mario Kart 8 as well. But I think that's the only reason they haven't done it. And yeah, it's like you said, I mean, it's just a shame that Mario Kart 8 probably had some of the best DLC of all time. And, you know, Mario Kart Tour, ironically enough, another Mario Kart game, is almost the complete antithesis of that. And it's just disappointing because I was a huge fan of how Mario Kart 8 did DLC on the original Wii U release of the game. And it's just a shame, too, that, you know, Funky Kong finally makes a return to Mario Kart. Dixie Kong makes her first appearance in a Mario Kart game ever. And it's on that, you know, which, as exciting as it is for me as a huge Donkey Kong fan, it just gets me really excited and hopeful for what's to come in that franchise, possibly. But, you know, as exciting as I am for that, it's just also a little bit bittersweet. You know, that it's like, oh, these characters are awesome, but I'll probably never get to play them because of the game they're in. And that just stinks.
Yeah, which you can roll the dice on it. And that, you know, that's just always the tough part about it. Every once in a while, I'll see a new character come to Fire Emblem. I'm like, oh, that'd be fun to play with them. But it's just like, I know what's awaiting me. And so I don't get back into it. And it's really soured my taste in every Nintendo mobile game. I put a lot of time into Fire Emblem Heroes, and that game is like fairly okay with playing it for free. You know, there's a lot that you can do, and there's a lot of people who make guides on how to beat the game with free characters. But, you know, you'll just eventually get to the point where you're trying to fight people who have spent enormous sums of money in the game. There's no way that you could beat them. You know, it's a weird economy where there's basically two groups of people, and they literally refer to this in the mobile industry as you've got your whales, and then you've got the rest of the populace. And the rest of the populace, you got to keep them hooked somehow. You know, the game is free to bring them into it, and there's enough to do for free to keep them playing. And then the whales who spend all the money get to like just bully them around and stomp on them. And that's sort of the monetization model. And, you know, therein the whales support the game being free. But I think, you know, there's just a more ethical way of doing it. And Miyamoto expressed some desire to do that. And then they released Dragalia Lost, which has even worse monetization practices than Fire Emblem Heroes. I mean, they have like subscription packages inside of the game where you could spend, you know, if you want all the subscription packages to get your items and stuff, it was like north of $40 a month, which is just insane that you'd be paying that much for an iPhone game with like 15 different levels on it. You know, it's just, I don't know, it boggles the mind. But, you know, obviously it's making money, it's giving Mario some exposure, but I would almost argue it's the wrong kind of exposure. You know, like you're going to sour the taste of Mario in the eyes of like a parent whose kid spends way too much trying to get Diddy Kong. You know, I don't think it's a good look for Mario. I'm much more for the Super Mario Run approach.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And that's why I just, in even for me, especially coming off of Mario Kart 8, which was a game that I really loved, you know, and you know, going from that to Mario Kart Tour is just, it doesn't feel good. You know, it feels like you're being taken advantage of by something that's locked behind a cute and familiar face in the Mario brand. And, you know, that's just not a good feeling. So, like I said, the takeaway that I have is I just hope it means something that for DK is imminent, with the amount of information that we've been getting lately and just the amount of time between game releases that we've had. So that's my one takeaway. As far as actually playing the characters, I haven't even considered the possibility. But I also hope it means that maybe a Mario Kart 8 update is imminent, because you and I talked about this. But, you know, a lot of people keep saying, the other disappointing thing with Mario Kart Tour is that we're getting all this content for Mario Kart Tour, but where's Mario Kart 9? And I keep telling people, I don't think we're getting Mario Kart 9 on the Switch, because usually Mario Karts like Super Smash Bros. Were usually, they'll only do one major release per console. I don't think they've ever done more than one Mario Kart in the same console life cycle. And even though Mario Kart 8 originally came on the Wii U, the thing is it's still selling like crazy. I mean, like, I could see it selling what the original Wii version did, because it's by far the best-selling Switch game right now. And you just got to think, like, if they release another Mario Kart game, at that point, Mario Kart 8 becomes obsolete, or, you know, it becomes an afterthought. Like, why would you want to buy Mario Kart 8 now when everybody's playing Mario Kart 9? you know, and that's the type of game that it is once a new one's released, you don't really go back to the old one except for, I don't know, maybe nostalgic purposes. But, you know, that's kind of the interesting thing to me is I don't think we're going to get a Mario Kart 9 until at least whenever Nintendo's next console is ready to drop. And that's why I just wish for Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, they would do some of these character or course packages and sell them as DLC for, you know, Mario Kart 8, because I buy that. Man, you could sell me a DLC pack for Mario Kart 8 Deluxe that's almost the full price of the game. And at this point, I'd be willing to buy it. You give me Diddy Kong, Dixie Kong, and Funky Kong, I'm sold. I don't even care what else is in there, especially if there's another DK track. But just knowing we could have great characters like that that are absent from that game, possibly more courses, somewhat of, or you know, like the Mario Kart Tour treatment, like that would get me really excited in the game again. And it would be nice because, you know, as I stated, I don't think Mario Kart 9 is coming anytime soon.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that. I don't think Nintendo's going to want to cannibalize the sales of something that is selling tremendously well, because as soon as the new one comes out, it splits some of the audience, and some people might go for 8 because it's cheaper, and some people might go for 9, and you know, you go through all that trouble just to create a game that is going to split the base, and sequels don't tend to do as well as the first one on the same system as far as we've seen with games like Mario Galaxy and Galaxy 2, but there's not a whole lot of examples because Nintendo very rarely does it on the same system. And so I would agree. And Mario Kart 8 is the perfect game where like every year or every half year release like a $5 to $10 little pack, and you know, it'd be explosive. You wouldn't even have to charge that much because you'd make your money back in just the sheer volume of available players who might be interested in it. And it's like, you know, hey, for $5, you want to play with Funky Kong? Yeah, I'm in. Just don't, like, you know, don't make me pay $5 for the chance of unlocking Funky Kong and, you know, the chance of wasting your money on nothing. So, yeah, that's, yeah, anyway, that's, and I just checked the recent number. As of March 31st, 2020, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe has sold 24 million, which is astonishing. I mean, that's 6 million more than Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. That's 7 million more than Odyssey or Breath of the Wild, Sword and Shield. Animal Crossing might catch up to it with how explosive that's been, but I think that's going to slow down once things return to normal in everyday life. And, you know, it sold 8 million on the Wii U, so it's like, why would you make a new game? But... because I don't think a new game would sell as well as that one. They're just there's not that focus on, like, you know, you want the Switch Mario Kart. But I don't know. At the same time, Pokemon releases plenty of games on the same system, so maybe there's a way to do it right.
Sure,
sales wise.
But you got to think I don't think they've ever done it. Like, if we go through all the Mario Karts right now, I don't think there's ever been more than one Mario Kart on the same system, and I think there's a reason for that. Like, Mario Kart's always been one of their best-selling franchises, and you just got to think, like, why would they want to? Because like I said, for me anyway, the minute you release Mario Kart 9, there was absolutely no reason to get Mario Kart 8. Like, none.
Yeah,
I mean, game just becomes a complete and utter afterthought, and that's why I just don't think it makes any business sense. Like, I personally, my theory is that they, you know, with their financial report, they said that we're about halfway through the Switch's life cycle. My theory is that they probably started working on Mario Kart 9, but they ported 8 because it was a game that was on the Wii U and nobody bought a Wii U, so it gives everybody the chance who bought a Switch to experience that great game. And I think they probably started development of Mario Kart 9, and now they're like, you know what we could do? We could hold off on this. Stop spending money on the production of that game right now. We could just pocket it until the release of our next console. And then guess what? That could be a release title, which a Mario Kart game has never really been. But you just see how well Mario Kart sells. And that means, like, if they make that a release title for whatever system they come out with next, it's going to do that much better. And I don't think they've ever had the luxury of having a Mario Kart game ready to go right out of the gate. But now they have the opportunity where, like, they've had all these years, or they're going to have all these years to essentially make another Mario Kart game. And I think I would use whatever ideas you have for the next game and use that as a way to sell your next system. I think that makes the most business sense.
Oh, yeah. And that's what they're going to do. And I mean, as far back as the Nintendo investor relations website lets us go with they're best-selling games of any system. You go to the DS, Mario Kart DS is the third bestseller. The Wii, it's the second best-selling game, only topped by Wii Sports, which came with basically every Wii that they sold. So, you know, that the Wii Sports is even like a little inflated. Top game on Nintendo 3DS, top game on the Wii U, top game on the Switch. Like, they never, you know, released a second one. And you'll see, like, you know, with bestsellers for the Wii, you know, Mario Galaxy charted as one of the top 10 games, but Galaxy 2 sold half as much. Now, you get Galaxy 2 was a little easier to make because you could port over all the assets, and, you know, it probably was a lot easier to make and a lot cheaper to make. You don't have to spend so much money on figuring out an idea for how Mario is going to play. But, you know, at the same time, there's less opportunity there. So, yeah, I think that's what we're going to see. So bring us the DLC is what we're trying to say. You know, that's one of the games I pay for a season pass for. It'd be totally worth it. There's just, you know, always a lot of fun to be had with that game.
Give us Diddy Kong.
So that's enough of that Mario Kart. I mean, release the Kongs. That's all I got to say. You know, I would trade half of the Mario Kart roster for Diddy Kong. I think most people would agree with me. I mean,
you could take away 75% of the roster.
You could take away the Koopalings, get rid of Baby Daisy and Baby Peach and Baby Waluigi and Baby whoever else. And
there's
get
no
rid
baby
of
Waluigi.
Are you sure? Because there's a baby version of everybody in that game, and then a recolored version of them. We've got Peach, Cat Peach, Rose Gold Peach. You know, Tanuki Mario and Cat Peach, I'm a little more okay with, but
no,
release the Kongs, you cowards.
Yeah. Yeah, then you imagine, like, they could even put King K. Rool in the game, like, which would be
oh
nuts.
My goodness,
I mean,
that would be so funny.
Yeah, I honestly think at some point he'll start making appearances in some Mario titles, but we'll see.
Yeah, he's just an awesome character. The way his cape would fly in the air and the way that he would taunt you after he lands a green shell on you would just be priceless. Yeah.
Yeah, well.
Or we could get a proper Donkey Kong Racing game. Now, that would be a way to kind of make a Mario Kart sequel, but to not cannibalize the sales of Mario Kart. If they brought back Diddy Kong Racing and then made that kind of their Kong-focused racing game, that could work, because on the platformer side of things, whenever they do that kind of 1-2 punch with the big Mario game and the big Donkey Kong game, it's worked in the past as far as the Super Nintendo and the 64. So,
yeah,
you know, one would hope. It worked on the Wii as well. You know, they're having New Super Mario Brothers and then Donkey Kong Country Returns. I mean, both of those games did really, really well.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's always been the thing, is you get the Mario game first, and then you get the vastly superior Donkey Kong game that follows on every console.
That's how it goes, man. All right, so let's jump into the next news story. This will be a shorter one, I promise. There is another open beta coming for the Ninjala game that's due out on Switch. So here's the skinny. It's happening on May 31st. This comes on the back of the game being recently delayed. Because of the virus is the reason that every game's getting delayed. The new launch is that it's coming out, I think, on June 24th. I put it in my calendar, but I didn't put it in the show notes. So, yeah, it's June 24th. The game was also data mined when the beta came out. There's a possible Sonic the Hedgehog crossover, which I'm going to be in that. But, yeah, the game looks fun. It's the developer behind the game is a lesser known developer, but they've been behind certain games like Ragnarok, which I played extensively as a middle schooler, is the most obscure MMORPG, but I'm into it. The game looks a lot like Splatoon. Obviously it draws a lot of inspiration from it, from the whole like colorful kids battling it out, but with like more toyish weapons, but it looks like a lot of fun. And I don't think we're going to get another Splatoon anytime soon, so I welcome this. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I second that, and it's, I mean, the reason why I think it's a good game is what you just said, is we don't really have anything like Splatoon coming out anytime soon, and this is something that can help fill that void, because Splatoon, I feel like, is going to become like Mario Kart, where it's just such a big game, or like Smash, where you're just going to save every new entry as a way to sell your next platform. And so that's why it's nice to have something like that. that will come out alongside a Splatoon as opposed to just waiting for the next Splatoon game, which is kind of a shame because I feel like there's more games that could be like Splatoon, and Nintendo already has so many existing properties that could build games like that or like a Ninjala, and they just don't for whatever reason. Like, I've been saying it for years, man. Like, you could do a first person, third person shooter of the Star Fox universe easily, and it honestly could be a game like Halo, because Halo has, you know, the implementation of vehicles as well, like things you can fly through the air, things you can drive on the ground, but then it's also got the, you know, hand-to-hand or like you know, the third person shooter combat. And I've always just thought, like, Nintendo has properties like that they could do that style of game like a Splatoon, which, you know, for whatever reason they haven't done it, they probably never will. They could do the same thing with Metroid, but that's why it's nice that another company, because I don't think Nintendo's not making Ninjala, right?
No, they're just promoting it a lot.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, so it's just nice, though, that
which I think it's
somebody's
a Switch
choosing
exclusive.
Yeah, well, it's just nice that somebody's choosing to make a game like that, because I think those are honestly the biggest games for people, like those massively online multiplayer games. I mean, that's why I think games like Fortnite are such a big deal. You know, because they have that format that's just inclusive to so many people, and it's an easy game to just play on the internet with so many different people around the world. So, you know, that, but yeah, Ninjala looks really exciting. I can't wait to try it out, and I'm definitely going to get out on this beta and see what it's all about.
Yeah, and I'm just excited for my boys, Gung Ho Entertainment. You know, we've been ride or die,
cool name,
since the early days. You know, Ragnarok Online, I was all about that. Ragnarok Online 2 was a bit of an oopsie, I would say. But yeah, they've lived in relative obscurity for a long time. I mean, they do the Puzzles and Dragons series, or they've done some of those entries, and that game, of course, has crossed over with Super Mario Brothers and is pretty popular in Japan. But outside of that, you know, they're a little lesser known. And so I hope this game really puts them on the map and lets people know the majesty of Ragnarok Online. Goodness, I played that game way too much in middle school. All right. Next news story. Mojang, the company, of course, behind Minecraft, now owned by Microsoft Corporation, rebrands to Mojang Studios. Word comes from what I would call a useless YouTube video. I don't know why companies do this, where they're like, hey guys, we're changing our name, here's a logo. But with that, they actually delivered some interesting information where they're rebranding to focus on projects outside of Minecraft, though they'll keep updating the main game. There's going to be more side projects like Minecraft Dungeons, merchandise, live events, and eventual feature-length film. And, you know, this is a fair enough. It's a good move from them. Minecraft Dungeons is set to come out on Switch and everywhere else on May 26th. We're going to be playing it at launch, and we'll give impressions on the game next week on the podcast. And this comes on the back of Minecraft reaching over 200 million sales, retaining the crown of best-selling video game ever. Matthew, as someone who's played Minecraft for what I'd estimate is about 30 minutes in your entire life, what do you think about this?
Well, it's tough to say as somebody who hasn't had too much experience with Minecraft. Honestly, it's always been a perplexing game to me. I don't think it's not fun or anything. I guess I don't understand the craze behind it. At least from playing the original one, you know, when I did. But yeah, I don't really understand the rebranding purposes. I never really get when companies do this and they make a new story out of it, because it just seems almost irrelevant. Like I don't see why you changing your name to include the word studios means that you need to update people on, you know, the other things that are going on. I mean, it's cool that they're updating the world on the fact that they're going to be looking at doing other projects and things like that, but you know,
yeah, this happened like a week or so ago with PlayStation as well. Now they're going to be branding all their first party games with this little intro called PlayStation Studios. And yeah, I mean, at best it's like, oh, that's a cool fun thing, you go guys. At worst, you're like teasing things that you're never going to deliver on. You know, like in the PlayStation Studios logo, there was Sackboy. They're just like, I don't know if we're ever getting another like Little Big Planet game. But, you know, I hope so. And, you know, I think where this craze started with the whole opening crawl and the logo and all that stuff was with the Marvel movies, that cool like comic book flipping thing that they have at the beginning. I mean, it's very iconic and it helps you to remember the brand. So I think a lot of people are sort of chasing after that. And yeah, the announcement I couldn't care for much, but just kind of saying like, hey guys, we're working on all this stuff is really cool. I like that sort of, you know, just a little pulse check. And that's something that Matthew and I have talked about a bunch, where we would just love if Nintendo would come out and be like, we're doing something with Donkey Kong, something in the next decade.
Yeah, well,
and, he's still alive.
Yeah, and I do appreciate the update and the transparency with customers and letting them know that they have plans to do other things just besides Minecraft. I just don't really know what that means for them, because I don't know what else they've made besides Minecraft personally,
well,
and I don't...
So Mojang, the studios, they have made other games that have, you know, come nowhere near the success of Minecraft, and I think that was before the Microsoft buyout. Now that that's happened, there is... Basically, the main pillars are Minecraft spinoffs, which has happened in the form of Minecraft Story Mode, which is a Netflix series and a game by Telltale. They've done Minecraft Earth, which is a augmented reality game chasing after the Pokemon Go crowd. And then Minecraft Dungeons is going to come out as well. The funny thing is that I don't think they're ever going to be brave enough to make a Minecraft 2. And I don't know if they ever need to, because they could just keep updating this. Obviously, the sales haven't slowed down at all. And so even just by the light support that they have, they've recently added, I think, ray tracing to the game. So if you have the graphics card that can support that, you can get a prettier Minecraft. And, you know, I imagine that this is going to be enough for them for a long time. But I'll be interested to see if they ever try and make a true Minecraft 2. It'd be very interesting. But, you know, to offer like a different perspective, I've spent, you know, a million hours inside of Minecraft. I'm really terrible at the game and I never quite got the hang of it. But I do see the value in just the amount of creativity it affords its players. You know, you could really just build or do anything and your agenda is your agenda. And I think it has much the same appeal as Legos do, where, you know, you could just make your own game. And there is like enough of a game there, chasing the Ender Dragon, finding ore and trading villagers for expensive stuff, that kind of keeps you engaged in the experience if you're not as much into that. But yeah, it's, you know, it's definitely really taken off. I mean, it's crazy to think that this game has become the top selling game, and it hasn't really slowed down. I mean, every month you can check the charts for something like the PlayStation Network store or something, and you'll see that Minecraft is among the best sellers. I imagine if I went to the eShop right now on my Switch, I'd probably see the same thing, that it's still Minecraft that's in that top list. And so, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how long this lasts, and then if they ever feel the need to make a Minecraft 2, because a lot of big games have done that and have failed. I mean, I mentioned Ragnarok 2 a moment ago, which, you know, is nowhere near this, because this level of Minecraft as a franchise, but it was much less well received than the original Ragnarok, and so they didn't really do much there. But yeah, sure enough, I just checked the eShop. Number 2 on bestsellers in the eShop is Minecraft, to the surprise of no one. But I'm excited to play Minecraft Dungeons with you and Trevor, and you know, I'll give you guys my impressions next week.
Oh yeah, I mean, it looks like a really fun game. I like the different take on the series that they're doing. You know, I wish more game franchises did things like that, where they use an existing property and they do a different thing with the game. I mean, like, Star Fox Adventures was like that, even though that wasn't meant to be a Star Fox game, but it's just like, it's kind of cool that you can take those characters and put them in a completely different game genre, and I wish more games were willing to do that with their properties. And I think, honestly, they, you know, end up selling better because, you know, they're characters or franchises that people recognize. So it looks really excited. I mean, I just like the platforming take on it.
Yeah, so we'll see how it goes. Next news story, a new game expo is coming called the New Game Plus Expo, to showcase a lot of Japanese games that are they're, you know, showcase a lot of games from Japanese developers and publishers, such as the likes of Arc System Works, Sega, Koei Tecmo, and some American companies like Way Forward. But that's going to be a semi-replacement of events that have traditionally gone on these seasons, like Tokyo Game Show and Gamescom. And so that's going to be happening on June 23rd. They're going to host it on Twitch from 9 p.m. to 4 p.m. Pacific time. So that'll be cool to see, you know, what kind of games that we'll get from some of these developers. It's a nice chance to hear from them in the absence of E3, which is kind of crazy to think that, you know, we're right around the corner from when E3 would have happened, and we're going to get a bunch of small stuff like this. But the thing that stands out to me, Matthew, is that Sega is in attendance. Is this going to be the moment where they finally announce what Sonic game is coming to us this year or early next year?
That's what it sounds like. I mean, that's probably why, you know, you were talking about how a lot of companies kept canceling what game announcements they had, and they kept saying, well, we've got games coming, we just don't know when we're going to tell you about them. And this is probably the reason why people were doing that, is because a lot of people were probably trying to figure out with the cancellation of E3 when they were going to make a lot of these announcements, and they probably were just waiting to be able to drop the news that this event was happening. And so that's why they're doing it. I also think this pretty much is the nail in the coffin that a Nintendo Direct is in fact not happening, which is, it's just severely disappointing to me. You know, you and I talked about it, you know, between the two of us, that I just think, you know, it's just, it's perplexing that the company that kind of pioneered the digital game announcement events is the only one that's not really taking part in such an activity during this time. This is the perfect time to do it. And, you know, I understand the conditions and everything that's going on with the virus that's affecting day-to-day life and workflow. But, I mean, they just dropped a trailer for Paper Mario, and you seriously can't convince me that, you know, Nintendo, of all companies, the people who, again, pioneered the whole video game announcement digital thing, that they can't find a way to string a bunch of trailers together, even if it's devoid of somebody making those game announcements. So it's just, I think that's
give us the trailers, we'll voice it.
Yeah, well, I mean, and they've done that before. There's some Nintendo Directs where, I think even last E3, they went a bunch of game announcements in a row where it would just show the Nintendo Switch logo, and then it would jump into a trailer, and then it'd just do the same thing for the next one. Like, they could absolutely do that, and like I said, I just think it's disappointing. While I'm excited to see what the other developers have planned, like you were talking about Sega, there's also Atlas. Ubisoft has an event the month after, and well, actually, this might. What's the date for this event again? Remind me real quick.
June 23rd.
June 23rd. So Ubisoft's is July 12th, I believe. So they've got an event planned. Like, you know, there's a lot of exciting things coming. I just, like I said, I think it's just severely disappointing and ultimately ironic that Nintendo, this I think pretty much confirms that there's no Nintendo Direct happening, because the rumor was that they went ahead and told a bunch of third-party developers, hey, don't worry about announcing your game within one of our Nintendo Directs, just go ahead and do it, and then this announcement comes out.
And that takes us into the bonus round for this week.
Welcome to Bonus Stage!
You know, there. So obviously Nintendo is not going to be at this New Game Plus Expo. So we're going to dive a little bit deeper into this discussion of Nintendo Directs and their summer marketing strategy in the bonus stage. So rumors suggest that Nintendo doesn't have a Direct planned at this time. This comes from a VentureBeat article where they have stated as well that they have instructed third-party developers to just go ahead and announce games themselves, that they, you know, don't wait around for a Nintendo Direct for a signal boost, which for those game companies is really heartbreaking. I mean, there's just incredible viewership and excitement around Nintendo Directs, and I think they're honestly kingmakers. I mean, just think if Ninjala wasn't on Nintendo Directs, how much of a more difficult time they'd be having marketing the game at this point. And to think that a lot of, especially indie games, aren't going to get their time in the spotlight for that really breaks my heart. And I hope it's wrong, but I don't know. There's been a lot of rumors lately that that have been totally confirmed. And, you know, we were told Paper Mario was coming this year, and then boop, boop, new Paper Mario. And I don't know what we have to look forward to here. And really, I don't know. Like I said, my heart goes out to those developers who have poured years into the games that they were hopefully going to get around the time that Nintendo would have showed them off, and now they're not going to get that. I hope it's wrong. I hope it's wrong.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is my theory, is that and I've shared this with you personally, but I don't think, I think there's not actually a lot that Nintendo has plan to release this year. And I think this is kind of it's unfortunate that it's the timing has correlated with the current pandemic that's affecting the world right now, but I think honestly they didn't have a lot planned for this year. And it I think that's evident because even before this happened, even before the potential cancellation of a Nintendo Direct that was supposed to coincide with E3, when was the last time we had a normal Nintendo Direct? We had they surprised us with a mini Direct in March, which was just kind of showing us news about a bunch of games that we already knew about. And I think that's when it confirmed Xenoblade, the port, was coming. But besides that, I don't even know what new games we got announced in there. And I just think when you look at the fact that they weren't in any rush or felt compelled to do any sort of normal Nintendo Direct for months, it was the longest stretch we had between directs of all time. And so you couple that with the fact that this thing with E3 happened, I think it was the perfect storm for them. I think it gave them an out where now we don't have, because E3 is kind of that event where every game company feels obligated to have some kind of presentation, have some sort of slate of announcements or just updates on games that are being developed. Because it's E3, everybody expects you to be there. And I think it was the perfect storm for Nintendo because they're like, now we don't have to have a presentation. And, you know, I think it would have gone a lot like last year's E3, where everybody got blown away by the fact that we were getting Banjo-Kazooie and Smash, and there's a sequel to Breath of the Wild in development. But besides that, what did we honestly get out of that E3? And it's just troubling to me as a Switch owner, because you just think about, besides the first 2 years, and even then that's debatable because we've gotten so many ports, there's barely been any first party Nintendo titles that have come to the console. And it seems like the only two that are announced that are not released yet, which are Metroid Prime 4 and the sequel to Breath of the Wild, are so far off. And honestly, that's why I told you, I think that's the reason they went ahead and announced the Breath of the Wild sequel last year, is I think they didn't have much of a presentation, and they knew that if they announced that, it would kind of cover up the fact that they had a pretty weak presentation. And that's why I'm like, take Breath of the Wild sequel out of last year's E3 presentation. And I mean, it's a joke. And I hate to, you know, rain on anyone's parade by saying that, but it's just like, you know, I love Super Smash Bros. And Banjo-Kazooie is one of my all-time favorite game franchises. So I was blown away by his addition to Smash. But, you know, a character addition's not enough for me to be excited as far as like what's to come in the future of a platform that I own. So like I said, and the other reason I just don't think there's a lot coming this year is it's just, when are they going to announce it? Like, if they're not going to do an E3 presentation, when are they going to announce all these holiday titles? And that's what just leads me to believe that for the rest of this year, we're probably not getting much else. And I don't know, that just makes me really sad. I thought this was the year we would get some pretty cool stuff, because like I said, in the Switch's life cycle, besides a couple key titles, we haven't really gotten a lot that weren't ports anyway.
Well, so here's, I'll give the positive angle, which I don't know how much I believe in, but it is there. The VentureBeat article also sort of suggests that they might be able to make a direct happen, but they're not rushing to meet, you know, the June timeline that other companies might be trying to kind of fit in line with E3, which might be fine. You know, I hope that they're able to do that. And, you know, we're able to see a lot of cool indie games, a lot of cool third parties that we weren't thinking of. And of course the big Nintendo surprises, but I think this, you know, you're definitely onto something where this could be speaking of a weak year or a drought between Nintendo releases. And, you know, Nintendo fans are not strangers to this phenomenon at all, especially if you were a owner of a Wii U. I mean, we'd go months and months and months and sometimes half a year without a Nintendo published game. And so it does speak to a possibility of things not coming. Now, Nintendo has done a lot better on Switch so far. I mean, you know, the start of the Switch was amazing. You know, we got Breath of the Wild and 1-2 Switch as soon as the system came out, shortly after Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. Shortly after that, you know, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe came out a month and about 2 months after the system came out. A month and a half after that, we got ARMS. Another month after that, we got Splatoon, and then Mario plus Rabbids came at the beginning of next year. But there are sometimes these pretty long droughts that have happened, and you know, I think that it is a little bit concerning. Or I guess I was mistaken there with the Mario plus Rabbids. That came out later in Japan, but in North America, it came out in August of that same year. And then Pokken Tournament port, Fire Emblem Warriors was a new game, Super Mario Odyssey. I mean, just a really, really, really strong first year. And they ended the year with a original Xenoblade title. You know, it's just they were doing great. And then, you know, started the next year pretty strong with Kirby Star Allies, and then later coming with Mario Tennis Aces in the summer. And then they had some ports in between there, like Hyrule Warriors Definitive Edition, Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze, and Labo releasing in the spring of that year to mix things up. And then they also helped publish some games, or really promoted some games that made them feel like Nintendo published games. Octopath Traveler comes to mind, that was in the summer there. And then it was like another port, and then some DLC. Super Mario Party came out that year, along with Let's Go Eevee and Pikachu and Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. So, you know, another pretty strong year for 2018. And then we start 2019 with new Super Mario Bros. Deluxe, Yoshi's Crafted World coming out in the early part of the year, then Super Mario Maker kicking off the summer. Fairly weak spring with, you know, outside of just getting Yoshi's Crafted World. But then in the summer, we got Mario Maker 2, Marvel Ultimate Alliance, and Fire Emblem Three Houses, all within 2 months of each other, which was an amazing time to be a Nintendo fan. Although, you know, a lot of those titles don't necessarily mesh together. And then shortly after, the much beloved Tetris 99 coming as part of the Nintendo Switch Online membership, we got Astral Chain from Nintendo in August, then Daemon X Machina, Link's Awakening in September. Then we got Ring Fit and Luigi's Mansion 3, Pokemon Sword and Shield. So we had a pretty strong 2019 as well. And then things just seemed to kind of slow down for a while. We didn't have any Nintendo Directs for the longest time. The first game of any consequence to come out was Pokemon Mystery Dungeon Rescue Team DX. I know they ported the Persona Fire Emblem crossover, but, you know, I don't know. The last time I saw that game was in a bargain bin at Target for $10 for the Wii U. So I don't know how big that game was, but I'm sure it's got its niche fan base. But Pokemon Mystery Dungeon recently came out in March. We had Animal Crossing ending March, and then, you know, another port slash. But I don't know. I actually really like the Xenoblade remaster. I'm thinking about picking it up. That's coming at the end of May. And then we have Paper Mario at the end of July. So, I mean, they could keep pace. But it's just, we haven't heard of anything that could be coming in the fall. And I got to say, it doesn't speak too well of the rest of the year if what we're getting is just a bunch of Mario ports and a bunch of, and, you know, a possible Pikmin port. So I could see where you're coming from on that part. A couple games that we might see that are coming out that are you know, still in development. Bayonetta 3 could come out. That's been in development for a long time, although it's, you know, with the most recent news item with that is that they confirmed that it's not canceled. So I don't know how development's going with that. And then there is a sequel to Detective Pikachu that's coming out at some point. You would think that they would want to release that close to the movie, but that's going to come out at some time. And we got that Breath of the Wild sequel, but is it going to be ready this year? I'm not sure. That could be their big fall game, but yeah, I don't know. I hope there's something rumbling in the jungle. That's all I got to say about it.
Yeah, well, and I honestly have been of the mindset, I kind of have been all year, that I felt like there was going to be some sort of DK game announced, and I'm still not, like, coming off of that theory. I think there might be something that had been working on, because there's also that, I forgot his name, but he's one of the producers of Returns and Tropical Freeze, from the Nintendo of Japan side of things. He's like one of the main people who did it. But, you know, he had said, I think like 2 or 3 years ago, that they had plans on, you know, what they were going to do with Donkey Kong next. So I don't think that's any question. It's just more so a matter of when and not if. But like I said, it's just hard to imagine that there's a bunch of game announcements at least coming this year. I mean, and there might be that one big title. Hopefully for me personally, it's Donkey Kong. Like, that would be awesome. But you know, if it's not, like, I don't know what else is really coming out this year, because, you know, like you said, all the rumors have been suggesting a bunch of ports, you know, up-res ports of some of the older 3D Mario games, a port of 3D World, a port of Pikmin 3. It's like I'm sorry, I'm just tired of playing ports. I actually bought a Wii U, you know, and we actually bought a Wii U, and
yeah.
I just want to feel like I you know, like, look, I love a lot of these games, and I've been supporting all of them. I've bought almost every port outside of what, like, I didn't do Hyrule Warriors again, because I didn't think that was a great game to begin with. But pretty much everything else, like, I've bought the ports of, like, I've supported these games a second time. And I just, you know, and other Wii U owners have expressed this frustration. We're like, look, we get it that you want to give all these games a second chance. And I'm glad that they're getting a second chance, you know, because I think, like, Tropical Freeze is one game you and I talk about all the time that might be the best 2D platformer of all time. So it's nice that it had the opportunity to do well on another system and actually be appreciated, and it has done really well on the system. So I'm thankful for that re-release. But, you know, at a certain point, I just want some new games to coincide with that. And this whole year has felt like there's not much new that's actually, you know, coming out. And I mean, you brought up Mario Maker as like a new title, but for me, that almost feels like, because I bought the first Mario Maker, and when you play Mario Maker 2, it doesn't feel that different, except for the fact that you have the 3D world perspective that you can build with. But besides that, it feels like the same game. And so that almost felt like a glorified port.
It definitely doesn't have the same sort of hysteria around it that the original Mario Maker did. But I think a lot of the changes that they made were much requested changes under the hood for level builders. And that's who they really catered the game toward. And maybe that was the wrong idea. I mean, maybe they should have catered it more to the average consumer. My problem with Mario Maker 2 is the obvious problems that they just never cared to solve. Like, the multiplayer is just awful in that game. It is barely playable, the amount of lag that happens. And they, you know, I keep checking every few months. The game's been out for over a year now. Or I think it'll be hitting its 1 year anniversary soon. And nothing, man. Nothing. They just released like what they say is their final content update, and still no fix. And so that was the main draw of Mario Maker 2. I mean, you know, think of a sequel as like, this one's got online 4-player and a new a style pack in 3D World. And I think if they rounded it out with a style pack for Super Mario Bros. 2, you got a great sequel on your hands. But I mean, yeah, the package that we received at launch was like a 2-hour story mode and improvements to the engine, and then the 3D World pack, which the 3D World pack is, you know, it's pretty lacking in terms of content and how much that you can do with it. But yeah, I mean, there are certain games like that feel a little too similar to what came before, and not really reaching for much more. I mean, Splatoon 2 kind of escaped that. I mean, they reused a ton of assets in that game, from weapons to levels and all that stuff. But I think they just made it work by it being just such a fun experience. And I want all these games to get their chance in the spotlight too. You know, I forgot what that stat was, but that Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze outsold the Wii U version in like a week in Japan for that specific market. And that's awesome that was able to happen, and that we got an extra chance to play Captain Toad. And I love when they add extra stuff to it. Funky Mode was awesome. Getting to play some Mario Odyssey levels in Captain Toad, great. Co-op mode in Captain Toad, I'm about it. But I think you do need to sandwich these games in between new titles to, you know, make it feel like it's not just a port machine. So, and they've done a great job of that so far. I mean, we haven't gotten too many ports in a row for really any span of time for the Switch. If that changes this year, it's going to look like they don't have much going on there. And that could be a little worrying. And I don't know what their plan was. I mean, you know, most HD games take somewhere between 3 to 5 years to develop. And that stands to reason that they might have seen the early sales of stuff like Breath of the Wild, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, ARMS, and Splatoon, and seeing that, like, okay, this is a system that's going to be hot. We need to, you know, green light a few more games and publish a few extra ones. And I think that's why we're seeing some games like Marvel Ultimate Alliance get published. We're seeing them tap Ubisoft on the shoulder to help them make, Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle. We had Team Ninja and Omega Force making Fire Emblem Warriors. You know, they're doing some of that, and I think they should invest more in that. But yeah, I think if all they had this fall was a treasure trove of Mario ports, I mean, I'm not mad about it. I'm begging for another reason to play 3D World. But if that's all they've got this year, that's not going to bode well for people's, you know, sort of confidence in the system going forward. But I mean, honestly, at this point, though, it seems like they've covered most of their bases. So do they really even need to impress anymore? Or is this just like a slam dunk for the rest of the system's life cycle?
Well, and that's my point, is I feel like they're almost kind of taking their foot off the gas pedal, because I feel like they're looking at this from the perspective of, we want to sell games to sell consoles. And now that consoles are being purchased at an alarmingly high rate, I think they've almost gotten a little complacent, where they're like, why spend a bunch of money producing a bunch of new projects when we could just coast off of this for the rest of the system's life cycle? And I just think if that's actually the way they're going about it, it's just I think it's a little misguided, and it would be a big error on their part, because I think this is the perfect opportunity to strike while the iron's hot. You know, I was telling you this, but I think the Switch is, with how well it's doing and how well it's been received, like, it's unprecedented, because the Wii did really well, but I feel like the Wii did really well based off of a gimmick. This is the first time in so long that, like, people are just eager to play a Nintendo system, not because, like, I can play Wii Sports with my parents or my family, but, like, I to actually play, like, real games with a real control scheme and not some motion control gimmick or anything like that. And I just think, because of that, like, this is the perfect opportunity to create so many new IPs, to revive a bunch of old ones. I mean, I was telling you, there's so many interesting things they could do with Star Fox. Like, this would be the perfect opportunity to reinvigorate interest in that franchise. Or what about F-Zero? What if you started doing Pokemon Let's Go style remakes of Earthbound? Because, you know, they're probably never going to make a new Earthbound at the wish of the creator of that series. But you get my point, is like, this is the perfect opportunity to, inject new life into a bunch of old franchises, or just create new ones, like, while you're on a popular platform. Because for all we know, the Switch could end up being like what comes after the Switch could end up being like the Wii U, where it's a flop, and then that's when you roll out a bunch of unique ideas then, and then nobody's actually there to appreciate them. And that's where I just think, like, on their part, it just makes so much sense, where if you could build back up interest in so many properties that you own, besides just Mario and Zelda and Fire Emblem, like that's just, you know, you can take that with you into whatever console you create next, and people have so many more things to look forward to. Because I feel like this generation of Nintendo fans, all they really care about is Mario, Mario Kart, Zelda, and Super Smash Bros. And then you have a small contingency based around, like, Fire Emblem, and then obviously Animal Crossing is huge. But it's like, back in the day, man, like, as a Nintendo fan, you had so much to look forward to. And I just think this is the perfect opportunity to build that interest back up in those properties. And then that way, when you release a new console, like, somebody has more to look forward to than Mario Kart and Zelda.
Yeah. And I think this is a big opportunity for a lot of those franchises. Nintendo's been recently talking about how they want to get more into the IP business. You know, they want to be licensing toys and different movies and TV shows and all sorts of stuff like that. And they're dipping their toes in by putting Mario on iPhone. They're dipping toes in it by, you know, opening up Universal Park, and by doing the Mario movie. But on the Switch in particular, with the install base that you've got, it's time to introduce a new generation to some of these beloved characters. And, you know, the proof is in the pudding in terms of, you know, how bonkers people go over characters as old as Banjo-Kazooie coming to Super Smash Brothers, it's a good time to introduce them to a bunch of franchises that would that they'll carry with them, you know? And I think you could just look at how Pokemon's done things. They have become recently the highest grossing media franchise in the world, you know, ahead of Mickey Mouse, ahead of Star Wars, ahead of Mario, way ahead of Mario, you know, ahead of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I mean, the Pokemon is just a juggernaut. And then they are just starting to tap into some of the potential that they could have with, you know, feature length films in that are live action. And, you know, they're not even done yet. I mean, Pokemon, and, you know, coming off the back of Pokemon Go, one of the most successful smartphone game releases, if not the most, you know, it's just, it's crazy to see what they're doing. Now, Nintendo does have a stake in Pokemon, but, you know, what's interesting is that they see that going on, and they haven't really applied the same logic to a lot of stuff. They did in the early days, but I think they just let the quality kind of get out of hand. The Super Mario Brothers show and the Zelda show weren't super well received. And I think the Super Mario Brothers movie was just a train wreck that really put a bad taste in their mouth from trusting Hollywood to make a faithful adaptation of their franchises. And it's time to get back into that stuff. But on the Switch, that's where it starts. You know, you play a game that's, as far as time investment goes, that's the most time you're going to spend with any IP. And it's why so many companies try to release games of their characters to, you know, get you invested in the IP so that, you know, when you start seeing them on the shelf of a Target's toy section, or you start seeing them on Amazon for like a tied together novel or comic book, like this is where it begins for Nintendo. And I think that they're just especially for Donkey Kong and Star Fox, that's the stuff that they're really missing. I mean, those are highly marketable characters that they could really be putting center stage for the system. And I think it's just a huge missed opportunity, especially for Donkey Kong. I mean, Donkey Kong was the beginning of Nintendo as far as it being a game company goes. For the longest time, Donkey Kong was the face of the company until they released Super Mario Brothers on the NES, and Donkey Kong took a long break on that system. And then Donkey Kong was again one of the faces of Nintendo, one of the more prominent faces in the Super Nintendo and 64 generation. Then he kind of vanished again. And they've created this void where, I mean, we could have all sorts of Donkey Kong stuff. And they did a lot with Donkey Kong back in the day in terms of toys and plushes and, you know, that that wacky TV show that they did where Donkey Kong sings and has the voice of an angel. But you do wonder if they're kind of dropping the ball here. Although I would like to think what you're thinking, that something's brewing with DK. And I think that's the perfect character to use in this mid cycle. You know, you got a Zelda sequel coming out for some of the, you know, older, more, the older audience that's into that stuff. And then you've got Donkey Kong for a more mass audience, general audience appeal. And I think Donkey Kong's a perfect guy to keep this train rolling. Pikmin would be great too. I think a new Pikmin would be awesome. Apparently they're working on a new one. Haven't heard about it in like 4 years, but apparently it's happening.
Yeah. Well, and I agree with you. And, you know, I think it's, you know, we've always talked about, because we're such big DK fans, how Nintendo's just, ever since the Rare buyout, they've completely mishandled that franchise. And what's resulted from that is you have a generation of Nintendo fans that have no idea why people have this affinity for Donkey Kong. You know, there's a lot of younger people that just don't understand the interest that a lot of older people have in the franchise. And that's because the franchise used to be such a big deal. You know, there was a time where you didn't know if Mario was really the face of Nintendo or if Donkey Kong was the face of Nintendo. Like, they really rivaled each other for that top spot. And you and I have always said this, like, if Donkey Kong games still were in production on a regular basis, like they used to be, it would be a better selling franchise than The Legend of Zelda. You know, and that kind of just shows you, like, we regard Zelda in such a way that, you know, it's crazy to think that something else besides Pokemon and Mario could kind of rival it, but it totally would. I think it would blow it out of the water, because it's still close behind it with half the amount of games. And so, yeah, I mean, it's just it's disappointing. And that's what I mean. Like, Donkey Kong's a perfect example of, like, you could use this opportunity like they did with the Wii with Country Returns. And that's why it's a shame that they kind of took their foot off the gas pedal after that, you know, because they ended up doing Tropical Freeze. But then it just seemed like they just didn't want to do anything with it anymore after that, which is odd because with the Wii U's install base, like, Tropical Freeze selling 2 million units on that system is really good. So I don't really understand that at all. And maybe they have been working on something. Maybe that's what Retro has been doing for the last 5 years and they've just been waiting for the right time to release it. There's people have speculated that, who knows, but it just seems odd because Country Returns, they did the same thing on the Wii and it paid off for them. That game sold like 7 million copies, you know, for a 2D platformer. I think that's incredible. I mean, that's almost what the original did. So, you know, I just think this is the perfect opportunity where you could do that same thing with a game series like Donkey Kong again. And I wouldn't think it's a stretch to say that that game would easily be selling, like, especially if it's a 3D game, it'd be selling Odyssey and Breath of the Wild type numbers. Like, I truly and wholeheartedly believe that. And like I said, this is just the perfect opportunity to do a lot of interesting things with your properties. And you know, you were talking about Nintendo has more interest in doing things with their IPs, but that's why I just think Nintendo is like, they are full of missed opportunities because they have so many recognizable and loved properties that they just have ownership over that they choose to do nothing with except for a handful of them. And that's why, you know, I think that's their misstep sometimes. I mean, I told you how Splatoon, when it was in development, Miyamoto actually wanted it to be a Mario game when he saw the idea for it. And I think that's their problem a lot of times is they see an idea and they're like, yeah, but what if it was Mario? Or what if it was Link? You know, like, even with Mario Kart 8, I could almost guarantee that somebody probably had the idea to put Captain Falcon in there because of the F-Zero courses. The Blue Falcon's a cart that you can drive. But who do we get instead? We get Link, or we get the villager from Animal Crossing. And it's like, those franchises don't need any help being put back on the map. It's like, why not just put Captain Falcon in there in a game that's wildly successful and popular? And who knows, some of that success and popularity might translate to a new F-Zero title if you ever made one. And so that's why I just think they do this kind of thing all the time. But I just think, man, the Switch is like the perfect opportunity. And it's just going to be a shame if they go through the rest of the system's life cycle without taking a couple swings at a couple of existing properties that they haven't done much with in a long time, or if they just try to create new properties. I think that's a good way to go too. You know, but what I don't want to see is just a bunch of Mario and Zelda games, because I just feel like we get enough of those, and those are going to sell regardless. But like, if you could make a Star Fox game and it sells and it gets people interested back in the series, I think that's a bigger win than selling another Mario game, which is always going to sell well. But that's just my take.
Yeah, and I think the diversification, I mean, taking a page out of Disney's book, I mean, you know, like, Pokemon is more valuable than Mickey Mouse by itself, but if you combine some of the other stuff that Disney does, like the Disney princesses, the Marvel Cinematic Universe that they have now, Star Wars, then, you know, obviously there's no contest. Disney is a king of the media franchise game. And, you know, I think there's a lot of space to make these characters more multimedia characters, but, you know, rooted in games. And so, yeah, I think, you know, obviously they're going to test the waters with Mario, and then, you know, we might get some other stuff happening. You know, I think there was a lot of buzz when there was that rumored Zelda Netflix show, and, you know, some other stuff has done really well, and they're like the Castlevania Netflix show has created quite a lot of buzz. And so I think what they need to do with a lot of these franchises, though, is just find a home for them. The reason that Zelda has been so consistent is that they've had the same sort of leadership with those games, I think, since I don't know when Aonuma started making the games, but he's overseen those games for a long, long, long time. And every few years, they're going to put out one of them. And they're going to put out spin-offs. They're going to put out, you know, all sorts of stuff that coincides with the franchise. And it's the same with Kirby. Kirby is, you know, not necessarily owned by Nintendo. They were created within HAL Laboratory, which now, you know, Nintendo has as a second party. But, you know, the reason that Kirby's been such a consistent and high-performing character is because you just get a Kirby game every few years. You don't forget about him. And to think that Donkey Kong has done as well as it has, considering that there's usually a 10-year gap in between a bunch of the eras of Donkey Kong. I mean, they do a few of the arcade games and then just nothing. And then when the Super Nintendo comes out, Donkey Kong comes back. He's around for the 64 just for one game and some spinoffs, and then gone. And then he comes back three systems later with the Wii. And to think that the franchise has stayed that popular despite not having anybody working on it is pretty crazy. That's what I feel like they need to do with a lot of these franchises. Just find them a home. And, it's not that that developer has to make the same game in perpetuity, but just having someone overseeing the forward movement of the franchise is a good thing. Having an Aonuma overseeing a Donkey Kong universe and continuing to push that. And I think they could even get some of their more niche franchises to be more popular. I mean, it's working with Fire Emblem. Fire Emblem has grown explosively over the last few years because they just finally started putting a little more gas behind it. And I would love to see that same energy with a few new franchises and even just taking more partnership. Intelligent Systems was able to get Fire Emblem Three Houses so soon after the Fire Emblem Gaiden remake came out, partially because Koei Tecmo did a lot of the heavy lifting on development and they just oversaw it. And, you could take Koei Tecmo's game, you could take their name off of it. And a lot of people just feel like that was a, homebrewed Intelligent Systems made game. And so they don't even have to have an in-house development studio. They could just have someone making a game for it. I think, they could get the guys who do Rayman Origins to make a Donkey Kong game. They could totally partner with Ubisoft to make some of those. Or, we saw what they did with Starlink. Maybe Ubisoft wants to take a hand at making a Star Fox game. It does hurt to see that, to know that we might miss out on seeing these characters at all on the Switch. I kept waiting for that Star Fox game on Wii, where I'd be able to use the Wii remote to point. They even teased that as a concept for the Wii, that they had tested it out with Star Fox, and it's like, oh yeah, the aiming's super cool on here, and we just never got a game. I hope we're all wrong about this, and I hope that the only things that are leaking are the, less important stuff, that we've got something coming this year, something big and something new. I'll take a Breath of the Wild. I'll take a Pokemon remake. I'll take something. But, while I'm never really disappointed or satisfied with games, there's always so much happening and so much to get to. I would love to see another strong holiday experience from Nintendo.
Yeah, well, and that's why, it's just the angst is almost getting to me, because I just feel like they're running out of time, at least for this holiday season. And so I really hope that I'm wrong. I really do. I mean, I mentioned on the last show that I'm always a little pessimistic when it comes to Nintendo. And I feel like that's just because for years, that's just how things have been. I understand why they've been that way for a long time, but I just think this was the same kind of thing that happened with the Wii, and I just don't want what happened with the Wii to happen again, because I felt like the Wii was the perfect opportunity to reinvigorate life and a bunch of properties as well, and they just didn't really do that, which, besides for Donkey Kong, which I'm really appreciative of, they didn't really do anything, and that's why, like, while the Wii sold a ton of systems, a lot of games didn't actually sell that well. Whereas, like, it's been the opposite with the Switch. It's like they're selling systems and the games are selling like crazy. So, that's why it's just, like I said, I feel like it'd be a missed opportunity if we don't get a lot of new things besides, your run-of-the-mill Mario and Zelda games and whatnot.
Yeah, which, I mean, it's a crazy point to bring up, that the Switch at this point has crossed the halfway point of the Wii's total sales, but only barely. And through the Wii's life cycle, Mario Kart sold really well, and New Super Mario Bros. Sold really well, in part due to them being the inside of system bundles. But to think that that games that were like huge on the system, like Super Smash Brothers or Mario, or Super Smash Brothers or Super Mario Galaxy, both coming in at around 13 million copies sold. You know, the Switch is with, you know, you just compare Ultimate and Odyssey and they've already blown past those in, you know, half the time. And it's just kind of crazy to think what other potential is out there for all these games. I mean, we might see the first Fire Emblem game to sell, you know, like 5 million units. That would be incredible if Three Houses could pull that off. And if I mean, honestly, if a Fire Emblem game could sell, you know, I think it's approaching 3 million. If Fire Emblem games could do that, then, man, what, the sky's the limit for a lot of Nintendo franchises. I mean, we've seen even just the new ones that they've created find a lot of early success. And I don't think that ARMS was particularly well marketed. I think it's a very confused game that doesn't know whether it's trying to attract a casual or competitive audience. But still, it's sold multiple millions of copies. And I think that, you know, it'd be a real shame to not see an expansion of the Donkey Kong or Star Fox or F-Zero universes on this platform. But, you know, I'm also not holding my breath to see any of those. So that's the deal. And, you know, hopefully we'll also see a Pikmin game, but there's a lot of opportunity in the air. So I'm excited to find out what they're working on. And, you know, hopefully Nintendo is able to drum up some type of Nintendo Direct so that we could see what them and their third party partners are working on. But until then, we wait in the shadows, playing more Pokemon in that tournament. But that's about all we have for you for this episode of We the People. You can join us next week for a little more of your weekly Nintendo news. And until then, if you want to leave a nice review on iTunes, that's super helpful in getting new eyes and ears on the show. And if you want to write into us with a question or comment, feel free to do so on patreon.com/we the people. We're going to use that as a means to kind of like have a community and field questions and polls and stuff. But there's not going to be any sort of membership tiers at this point. Maybe we'll eventually do some extra goodies in there for some people. But that's all I got for you for now. We'll see you next week for another episode of We the People.